from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. There's something about potential pickling preservation possibilities that makes people's ears perk. And no, I'm not going to say that five times. But we are going to talk about fermenting for the 55 minutes of forum that follow. We'll talk about what to pick and how to preserve it, what's driving the food preservation phenomenon, and why being bothered by bacteria and botulism is borderline behavior. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Almanzo ate the sweet, mellow baked beans. He ate the bit of salt pork. He demolished a tall heap of mashed turnips, a hill of stewed yellow pumpkin. Then he sighed, tucked in his napkin, ate plum preserves, strawberry jam, grape jelly, and spiced watermelon rind pickles. And then he ate a piece of pumpkin pie. That's an excerpt from Laura Ingalls Wilder's Farmer Boy, an homage not so much to consumption, though it is that, but to canning and food preservation. Note that just about everything that Almanzo just consumed was canned: plum preserves, strawberry jam, grape jelly, or pickled, as in spiced watermelon rind pickles. Why am I talking about everything that Almanzo ate? Well, because it's our topic for this hour, the greater and renewed interest in food preservation, from canning to pickling to fermenting. That is going to be our topic this hour. Joining us to talk about that, Karen Solomon, author of Jam It, Pickle It, and Cure It, and also several ebooks on Asian pickles. Karen Solomon, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Joining us as well, Alex Hosvin. She is the co-owner of the Cultured Pickle Shop in Berkeley. Alex, good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us by our connections to a studio in Los Angeles, Kevin West, author of Saving the Season, A Cook's Guide to Home Canning, Pickling, and Preserving. Kevin West, good morning as well.
Good morning. Nice to be with you today.
Happy to have all of you here. I wanted to tell that story because it's a favorite of mine from when I used to read it to my daughter when she was little. And I'm just curious to start in that way about this idea of canning and pickling and preserving as a connection to our sort of common history and common culture. Karen Solomon, what does that resonate to you?
Well, the first thing for me that comes to mind is just thinking about the history of preserving food. I've been reading a lot about Chinese pickles lately, and you know, they've been doing it for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And of all of the ways that we have of preserving food, I think just plain basic salt was really one of the first things that was used to make food last longer and to make it more savory. And oddly enough, people think of pickles as vegetables and maybe fruits, but it was meat. It was preserved meat, which was one of the first ancestors of the pickle you see today.
And Kevin West, you write in your new book that sometimes for you, food and recipes are a way of telling stories. Say something more about that and about how, including the story that I just read, resonates to you in terms of the way in which food plays that kind of fundamental connection to our past.
Yeah, well, I think that food and storytelling go together in such a natural way. And that's true around the table. I mean, we've all had that experience of eating a delicious dinner with friends and family and telling stories over the meal. But that's also true in the kitchen. And I think anyone who has learned to cook from spending time in the kitchen with an older relative or with a close friend knows that you learn a lot. And what you learn is not just technical. You don't just learn how to make a dish. You also learn a lot of stories that go along with that dish. So what I say in the book is that really the recipes are vehicles for the stories.
Kevin West, the author of Saving the Season, A Cook's Guide to Home Canning, Pickling, and Preserving. And Alex Hosvin, what have you noticed in your store in Berkeley about people's renewed interest in this? How has that changed in recent years? What is it that's drawing people to the Cultured Pickle Shop?
It has phenomenally increased over the last several years. It's unbelievable, the interest that we're seeing. I think that people are starting to realize that fermentation unlocks an entirely new palette of working with your food. People have known this really throughout history. If you look at fermented foodstuffs from so many different cultures that use it both as a means of preservation and as a means to enhance their diet. And so there's starting to be an understanding of that and a vast renewed interest. I think that people are starting to understand the importance of fermented foods on their health and their overall well-being, and we're seeing a huge increase in that.
And let's talk first then about what fermenting and pickling is. Give us your definition. I mean, what is fermentation and what is it about that process that's healthy?
Fermentation is at its most basic cooperation with microbes. It is using microbes to break down your food in a controlled way. The majority of what we do at our shop is lactic acid fermentation. And so that is creating an environment for lactic acid producing bacteria to acidify the vegetables that we give them to feed on, both preserving it, making it more digestible, making it really an entirely new food.
And what is it about that that's good, Kevin West? What are we getting that's good in bacteria, something we normally think is not necessarily that healthy?
Well, there's so much interesting research right now about the role of bacteria, of microorganisms, of our microbiome within our own bodies in maintaining our health and maintaining our weight. And what's really fascinating, I think, about fermentation is that it's a microenvironment that gets going. The vegetables come sort of pre-seeded, if you will, with all of the necessary spores and such to make this ferment begin to happen. And when those beneficial bacteria take over the microenvironment, they have this effect of monopolizing the environment in such a way that eliminates the danger of pathogenic bacteria. And of course, everyone who thinks about preserving automatically thinks about botulism and the sort of the potential health risks. But what's fascinating about fermentation is that the CDC notes that there has never been a case of food poisoning associated with fermented vegetables. So the fermentation process is a very safe, it's a very ancient, it's a very reliable method for preserving food. And as a wonderful byproduct and consequence of that microbial action, we get this tangy, acidic, zippy flavor that we associate with fermented foods like dill pickles, like kimchi, like sauerkraut.
Let's talk about the basics of how you go about doing this, because as I was reading up on this last night, Karen Solomon, it's not that hard, right? I mean, basically creating a pickle is pretty simple. Tell us what's involved.
And when you're speaking pickle, you mean fermented pickle. The recipe that I usually use when I teach a class or when I speak is I make people raise their hand and hold up all five fingers spread out. And I say, okay, you see that? That's five. You want 5 pounds of head cabbage. And then I make them put up three fingers. And I say, okay, that's three. You want three slightly rounded tablespoons of sea salt. And basically right there is the most essential, most basic recipe to make your own kraut at home.
You jump from pickles to sauerkraut, but that's okay. That's it's simple too.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you speaking like a fermented, like a dill pickle recipe?
Right, but that's all right. Stay with sauerkraut.
Okay. Oh, okay. So I mean, from there, it's just a matter of taking that cabbage and layering it with the salt. You want to try to keep as much salt as possible for the top and to sprinkle around the rim, but you're putting in the cabbage, packing it down, layering it with salt, putting in the cabbage, packing it down, layering it with salt. Oh, and I should also mention the vessel. I always recommend that people use the insert of their slow cooker, which is, you can go out and spend $100 on a harsh crock or some kind of imported European pickle crock if you like, but you probably already have something that you can use at home. The insert of your slow cooker or a giant glass vessel, like something that you would use maybe to make lemonade or even a well-scrubbed, never used fishbowl, as long as it has a really wide mouth. Last choice being also a food-safe plastic bucket. And then you layer that cabbage with the salt and then, of course, the most amount of salt on top. And then you take a blunt object such as the handle of a hammer, the business end of your French rolling pin, and you just kind of stab at that cabbage to get it to release as much of its internal liquid as possible.
How did Kevin West's sauerkraut become such a big deal? I mean, I think I've heard more about sauerkraut in the past few days than I have in a really long time.
Well, sauerkraut may be trendy, but let's remember that the history is a long history. You know, sauerkraut is very similar to kimchi, although they come from different parts of the world. And the Cambridge Encyclopedia of Food suggests or muses, let's say, that kimchi is as old as organized agriculture itself. So these kind of food preservation techniques, and Alex was speaking to this a moment ago, really go back to the dawn of civilization, right? But I think your question is a slightly different question, which is, you know, why is this stuff trendy today? And I think that there are different reasons. Briefly, one reason is the success of the farmer's market culture. I think that once you start going to a farmer's market, once you start shopping at a farmer's market, once you start to enjoy and appreciate that seasonal bounty, which is abundant but fleeting, you start to think about ways to preserve it. So that's, you know, that's one thing. But there's also something about the way that our culture is so virtual these days, or at least we spend so much of our daily life interacting with screens, and our communication with other people is mediated by the internet and the cell phone. And sauerkraut and other preserved products, sauerkraut is a very tangible thing. You go to the market, you buy a head of cabbage, it's got that great weight to it, you slice it up with your hands, you smash it down with salt in the way that Karen was talking about, and then you put the crock aside, you tend it for a few days, and what happens in the end is you have a product. It's a product that you can taste, it's a product that you can share, and there's something very, very gratifying about working with your hands to create a tangible product. On the weekends, let's say, when we spend so much of the week, you know, typing on computer screens.
Kevin West, author of Saving the Season, A Cook's Guide to Home Canning, Pickling, and Preserving. We're going to open up our phone lines and ask you for your participation in our program today, your questions about how to pickle, how to make sauerkraut, what to can, and what to do during this time of year. We are just into summer. This is the first full weekend of summer coming up. What is it that we can go about doing and canning at this time of the year, as well as pickling and fermenting? Join us at 866-733-6786. If you ever had a question about how to pickle or how to sauerkraut or how to jam, this is the time to get your questions answered. 866-733-6786. You can email them to us, too, at forum@kqed.org, or you can post your questions on our Facebook page or on our website as well. So how to start? Let's say you want to get going with doing some pickling of your own. What's the first thing you ought to do, Alex?
I guess decide what it is to pickle. And we are fabulously lucky in our local food shed that we're not limited to cabbage. Cabbage is a great vegetable to do and works really well. But you can go to the farmer's market and you could pick up turnips or radishes or carrots or beets or pumpkin or so many things. So I guess your first...
So pickling is an equal opportunity activity, right?
Absolutely. And part of what our shop really celebrates is that equal opportunity, is this dazzling local food shed. You can walk into our shop right now and find, you know, easily, I'd say, 50 products. From vegetables, mostly that, you know, we're in early summer now, but we were pickling all winter and spring. And so there's a really dazzling array of products. And I think that it really highlights our fortunate location.
So what's rule number one, Karen, when you're going out to pick something, how do you pick it? How do you decide on the cabbage to pick, or the cucumber, or the carrot to pickle, or can for that matter? And let's keep it focused on where we are right now this time of year, last weekend in June, 1st of July. What makes sense to go out and pick out to preserve?
To preserve or to pickle?
Well, I guess I don't even know what the difference is necessarily. So you tell me.
In the realm of preserves right now, I guess what I should say, what I'm making at home is a lot of berry jams. The berries are bursting like crazy. And it's a really easy jam to a regular, like a blueberry jam, a blackberry jam, raspberry jam are definitely one of the easiest to put together. I mean, I don't even can it. We just eat it so quickly or I share it with friends that it's just gone. So right now when I'm thinking about summer produce specifically, I'm working with a lot of berries.
And is there a trick, Kevin West, to picking it out, or at this time of year, is it just anything good to go?
Good food at the markets right now. So much fruit. This is maybe the best week of the year in Southern California for fruit because we have boysenberries, which are our signature berry in Southern California. We have Blenheim apricots, which is one of the finest stone fruits in the world, topped perhaps only by the Snow Queen nectarine, a white nectarine that has this wonderful, very racy and dynamic balance of sugar and acid. And then on the vegetable side, you know, this is the season when cucumbers are perfect for pickling. This is the season when the dill is heading up in this beautiful way. So you can hardly, I mean, you walk through the market and it's easy to get overwhelmed by the abundance. I think generally my advice is always to discourage people from a kind of old-fashioned misconception, which is that the jam pot or the pickle crock or the preserving jar is a way to use the rest of the harvest. You know what I mean? The way to use, let's say, the windfall fruit or the way to use the overgrown vegetables that you didn't want to eat fresh. That really is not right. to make good preserves, you have to start with good produce. Good fruit makes good jam. And so when you go to the market, you really want to get the pick of the harvest. I mean, in order to have perfect raspberry jam, you have to have perfect raspberries. The best zucchini pickle is going to come from these little teensy zucchini that are coming into the market right now. The vegetables should be fresh and crisp and young and really at their prime. So whatever you choose, you know, choose the best thing in the market on that day.
Start taking our questions, and shocking though it may seem, our first question is about sauerkraut. Tina in Menlo Park, go ahead.
Interested in making the sauerkraut, but I'd like to know how long do I need to store it or ferment it for? And I'm guessing it's going to be in a cool, dry, dark place. And also, does the lid have to be airtight, or you just kind of, you know, like my crock pot doesn't really have a seal to it, or can it just be like a recycled peanut butter jar that kind of, you know, a small serving with a tight lid?
Okay, Tina, thanks. Karen?
So definitely not airtight. That was the first my eyebrows raised when you said that. You can take the cabbage and mix it with the salt and mash it down and then transfer it to that peanut butter jar. And then at this time of year, you know, your kraut's going to go pretty quickly. It can go as quickly as 2 or 3 days for it to ferment. Particularly if you're going to pack it into individual smaller jars, you know, with the weather being so warm. And yes, definitely a cool, dry place out of direct sunlight. And then what I usually do is take either a piece of cloth or even just a piece of paper towel and lay it over the top and secure it with either a tie or a rubber band or something. You want to keep out insect and debris, but you absolutely must have exposure to the air.
So I want to understand, Kevin West, this airtight question. Because this is obviously a principal difference, I assume, between fermenting and canning. And fermenting, you want air. You want stuff bubbling around. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. The canning process is essentially a pasteurization process. So you take a product, a jam or a pickle, you put it in a jar, you seal the jar. The jar is hermetically sealed. And then you process that jar in a boiling water bath. So you're essentially eliminating all forms of life within that jar, right? That's why it's shelf stable. That's why it lasts for a long time. Fermentation is different. Fermentation, you want those signs of life. You want activity. And the fermentation process, as I said earlier, is really a kind of microecology. And so this question that the listener has about when do you eat your sauerkraut, that really is it's a matter of taste. You can eat it. You can eat it the first day you put it up, or if it's cool, if the fermentation is happening at a very slow pace, that sauerkraut will last for a long, long time.
Is this like wine? In that it takes – you can kind of let it age as you wish?
Yeah, absolutely. You can think of a ferment as a life cycle from a very fresh vegetable to a very mature pickle. And it's edible at any point in that life cycle. You know, there's some people like kimchi very fresh, only fermented for a day or two. I also have some kimchi in my refrigerator that is now about 18 months old. It's still in really good shape. It's very edible. It's very delicious. It's quite aged. It's quite funky. I happen to like that really strong, funky quality. But the product has a very long shelf life if it's maintained properly. And a cold refrigerator is really going to slow the fermentation almost to a halt, which is why it lasts so long.
Tina, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Nicole in Oakland. Nicole, go ahead.
Hi there. I run a small Oakland-based business called Farm Curious, and I just wanted to speak to the trend of fermentation as I've seen it in my business. I feel like when I started the business 3 years ago, 2010 was the year of canning. 2011 and 12 felt very much like the year of cheese or cheese making. And 2013 has blown up with fermentation and people asking questions and wanting classes. Kimchi is very hot. So I think it's great that you guys are covering this. And I personally love Karen Solomon very much.
Right. I love you, Nicole.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Nicole. Thanks for the observation. Let's go to Camilla next in Sebastopol. Camilla, go ahead, please.
Hi. Just had a comment about the trending, kind of to follow the last caller, is that I think there's a lot more education around the positive effects on digestion that sauerkraut, kimchi, some of these really well-fermented things have. And I think some of that education is what is inspiring people to get more and more interested. So that was my only comment.
Camilla, thanks. What is the primary benefit? I mean, I guess how would my life be different if I ate more sauerkraut or other fermented foods? What am I going to gain from that?
Well, perhaps we should think of you as more than just you. There has been research now that shows that 90% of you is not actually comprised of your DNA. And so I think what you get out of eating fermented foods is you get that you are feeding your whole self. And when you feed your whole self, you will create a much more diverse and therefore resilient ecosystem for you to walk around in the world with.
All right. I have a new view of who I am. Philip in Oakland is next. Philip, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I have been, mostly my wife, have been canning quite a bit the last 5 years. And we go to Central Valley to large producers, places where they're packing and can get good buys on fruit. And one of the unusual things that we found was we tend to go to some of the Asian markets, and mangoes can be purchased at certain times of the year pretty inexpensively, and they can beautifully. And we also can fresh berries, so you mix those two in the winter, and it's spectacular. But I had a question. We've canned mangoes a couple of years now, and then this last year, just recently, we got some mangoes. They tasted fine. They were in good shape. After we canned them, they have a little bit, when you open them, they're a little bit of an old smell, and the flavor was slightly off. We think fruit seemed the same. Couldn't understand quite why there was a transition. I wonder if
all right.
you have an answer.
When
and
in doubt,
just,
throw it
just
out.
Hold on to that, if you would, Philip. Stay with us through the break because we have to take a short break here, and we will return to answer the mango mystery. And you can phone in with all of your other mysterious questions about pickling and canning and fermenting at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email your questions or tweet them to us or post them on our website or on our Facebook page. Back with more in just a moment. This is Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. We've got questions on apricots, on flora, on eggplants, on jam, on salt, on vinegar, on canning, on kombucha, on cabbage, on vinegar. But first, we must solve the mango mystery. Philip, your question again, quick snapshot review. What do you want to know?
We've just had a couple of years of great success canning mangoes. And this year, we thought we had good fruit. And it has kind of a musty smell, and the flavor's slightly off. Wondered what it might be.
Great. Karen.
Well, I can't necessarily answer what it might be. I mean, you know, fruit or vegetables or agricultural products, there is always some variation in there. You never know during the canning process, there could possibly have been some sort of contamination somewhere along the line, maybe in a utensil, maybe on your countertop. But I urge you, when in doubt, throw it out. If you have any kind of preserved food that's been sitting on your shelf and it's, you know, growing tentacles and has scary eyeballs, by all means, please get rid of it. If you are a person who's just likes to be very, very cautious with their canned food in general, if you take anything that you've made that is canned and boil it for 10 minutes at a high boil, you can kill botulism that way.
Let's just spend a moment more on that, because you write about that too, Kevin West, that everyone has this fear of botulism. Mm. It sounds like maybe in this case, Philip, you know, as Karen suggests, should when in doubt throw it out. But is botulism something people really need to worry about on the fruit side? I know it's less an issue with high acidic foods like tomatoes.
Tomatoes are actually a special case, and we would need to address that somewhat separately. Botulism is a bad deal, but we understand exactly what the silver bullet is against botulism, and that silver bullet is acidity. For the purposes of food preserving, high-acid foods are those with a pH below 4.6, and high-acid foods include almost all of the fruit, berries, stone fruit, citrus, of course, apples, pears. High acid foods are not susceptible to the risk of botulism because the acidity keeps you safe. A pickle is a vegetable that has been acidified either through the addition of vinegar, a vinegar brine, or through the acidification of the fermentation process. So a properly made pickle is also not susceptible to the risk of botulism. There are other kinds of spoilage. Mold is a bad, will make your food smell bad. But, you know, botulism is a risk that, to my way of thinking, is overblown in the public imagination. It's one of those very low incidence, high consequence, but low incidence risks, somewhat like airplane crashes and shark attacks.
Hmm.
It happens.
Yeah, with Philip's bad mangoes, it's not likely to be botulism, but still, would you agree with Karen, when in doubt, throw it out?
I absolutely would agree. And from this distance, it's difficult to assess what's wrong with his mangoes, but he should throw them away.
Okay, Philip, thanks. Thanks for staying with us and answering. We hope we've answered your question. Let's get through some more calls, and we've got lots of other comments coming in too, but we'll take another call first. Stefan and apricots. Stefan, go ahead.
Hi. My family and I, we do apricot jam with Blenheim apricots, and I was probably the first year last year we did it, and the flavor, the difference between other apricots and Blenheim apricots is a whole nother level. It's almost like, this way my mom described it was, it's almost like perfume for the mouth.
Mm.
It's the flavor and the texture is just amazing, and that's my comment.
All right, Stefan, thanks. And Kevin West, this is something that's a big favorite of yours as well.
Oh, gosh, I love the Blenheim apricot, and I write about it at some length in my book. And I would just agree with what the listener was saying. It's a very special fruit, and there's nothing quite like Blenheim apricot jam. It's my very favorite of the year.
Some questions to go through here that our listeners are writing. Erica writes, any recommendations for sources of less sugar jam recipes that are not fruit butters? And a couple of people are asking questions, actually, about jam. Isn't jam just candy by another name? Karen?
I don't make very, very sweet jam, but using sugar along with lemon is a way that you get your jam to not only taste good, but also to gel, to get it to a nice, smooth and at least spoonable, spreadable, or knife spreadable consistency. I know locally June Taylor does some pretty magical work with really low sugar jams. I think in some of her recipes are like 1 to 10 fruit to sugar. But for the home cook, for a fail safe, I usually recommend about 2 to 1, like half the weight of the fruit with sugar.
Another jam question from one of our Facebook listeners. Do you have to use pectin to make fruit jams? I don't like the texture when I use it, but I heard it's a must. Kevin West?
Absolutely not a must to add a commercial pectin supplement. Pectin is a naturally occurring a complex carbohydrate. It's in all fruit. So when you're making jam, you're automatically using the natural pectin within the fruit. It is not necessary to add any commercial pectin supplements.
To Stacy in San Jose with our next call. Stacy, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm about to have an abundance of eggplant, and there aren't many recipes out there. I do a lot of baba ganoush and freeze it. I found a caponata preserve, but I'm wondering if anybody there has some recommendations for some good eggplant.
Stacy, thanks. Alex?
Eggplant is super tricky. It sort of goes against my general rule of thumb when I'm thinking about vegetables to pickle, which is, do I like to eat it raw? Which is a good rule of thumb. It's not totally fail-safe. But eggplant, I haven't found a lot that I can do well with eggplant. I've eaten wonderful eggplant pickles in some Japanese restaurants, and that's probably the direction I would go with it, using a medium, you know, less an acidification, but more something like a rice bran or a sake dregs, something to really break down that eggplant over a long period of time. Maybe a kimchi could work well too, something really kind of spicy and flavorful, but tricky one.
Okay, Stacy, thanks. Good luck with your eggplant. Roy in Novato is next. Roy, go ahead.
Hi, I'm curious regarding any links between fermented foods and vascular type headaches, migraine type headaches. I've been suffering from headaches for a few years, and I found out that drinking beer or eating a lot of fermented foods, I can eat a little bit of pickles and that kind of thing, causes me to have a vascular type headache. And is there a type of fermented food I could eat that, because I like it, but that I can eat that won't trigger it so much, or is there something I can do to mitigate the effect of fermented food on headaches?
Yeah, interesting question, Roy. Kevin West, do you have any thoughts on that?
Boy, I sure don't. That's really outside of my range of expertise. Sandro Katz's book, The Art of Fermentation, is really, to my mind, the standard reference. And perhaps Katz would have some, you know, some overview of the medical literature on that subject.
Give that title again one more time,
Alex?
Kevin, would you? Kevin, give that title one more time where Roy can look of the book.
Oh, it's Sandor Katz is the author, and it's The Art of Fermentation.
And that's K-A-T-Z?
That's right.
Okay. Roy, sorry we couldn't provide more help, but maybe that book will be useful. We should mention, by the way, on our website, we do have recipes from both Karen and from Kevin. Also a link to Alex's shop, the Cultured Pickle Shop, which has recipes there. So if you're looking for recipes for just about anything other than eggplant, we'll have them posted on our website. Roy, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Dave in Healdsburg. Dave.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to make a quick comment about fermenting cabbage. And the comment was made about, you know, making sure that air came in contact with it. And actually, we're a commercial sauerkraut manufacturer. And the process of sauerkraut is heterofermentative. And the bacteria really probably shouldn't be exposed to air. And ideally, if you can lay some Saran wrap on top of the sauerkraut, press it down, put a water bag on top of that to make sure that no air gets on the cabbage, your chances of success will be much higher, and also you'll prevent any bad things from finding their way in there.
Sorry. This is great. This is great. I did not expect to have a sauerkraut controversy. I'm so happy about this, actually.
Yeah,
Alex, go ahead.
I don't think it's a controversy.
Not at all.
No, I think what Karen was trying to say is that you can't have an airtight container, that it does need to breathe, that you need to allow the CO2 to escape. However, lactic acid fermentation is an anaerobic activity. And so you do need to, as much as possible, block out oxygen, because oxygen absolutely will degrade your kraut. Oxygen really is your enemy at that point and will create a lot of surface growth that is undesirable. So there are specialty.
Alex, you're a genius.
All right. So darn it.
I do a lot of kraut.
Darn it. Darn it. We don't have a controversy after all.
No controversy.
There's unanimity of opinion.
I've been giving the recipe in dribs and drabs, but it's definitely important that that smashed cabbage with salt is weighted, and that helps to compress it, and it's keeping the air away, and also that it is covered in a protective layer of liquid, which is going to float to the surface of your kraut. So, yes, no controversy whatsoever. I think we're all on the same page.
Okay. Dave, thanks. Let's get on to Dale in San Francisco. Dale, go ahead.
Yes, I could go on at length about preserves. My family has been into it for decades. But what I wanted to cut right to was olives. I got adventuresome a few years ago and started curing my own olives, and the reward was just spectacular. And I would like to direct people towards the recipe provided by the UC County Extension, UC Davis, and it is a lye cure, which sounds scary, but if you follow the directions, it's very, very foolproof and very safe and produces results that are just unbelievable.
All right, let's spend a moment on olives and any ways that you have that are favorites to deal with them.
I always do a saltwater cure. It does take longer than the lye. You have to be a little more patient with that, usually a couple of months. But for me, I'm not in any grand hurry. I don't mind waiting at all. I pick through them. I wash them. I make a pretty salty solution. I'm usually about a cup of kosher salt to one of my big 2-gallon buckets. And I let that sit and I change the water about once a week at first, and then a little less often as they age and they start to cure. I don't do the lye curing method, but though they are delicious.
Any olive tips, Kevin?
They're good in a martini.
All right.
Indeed.
I haven't done any olives. I would love to come to Alex's shop and see that process she just described. I'm really interested in olives, but I haven't worked with them before.
That was Karen.
That was actually Karen. But
Karen. I'm sorry, Karen.
No worries.
Dale, thanks for the call. This brings up the question of salt. And Chris asks us, isn't all this salt unhealthy? And follow-up question, does vinegar have salt in it? So once around on salt. Kevin?
This is the way I would answer that question. Preserved foods are often a kind of condiment. Jam is fruit preserved with sugar. I would not suggest that you sit down and eat a whole gallon of jam, but a little jam on toast is, to my mind, not a health problem. The same with relish, the same with pickles. We don't eat pickles by the barrelful at a sitting. We eat pickles as a condiment to the meal. And so, to my mind, the amount of salt that is absorbed by that pickle in the fermentation process does not represent a health risk. As part of a balanced diet for someone who has not been advised by a doctor to avoid, salt. Vinegar does not have salt in it.
So Alex, you can go about this two ways, right? There's you can do it by way of salt, or you can do it by way of vinegar. Are those your sort of choices when you're thinking about how you're going to pickle something?
Yeah, I don't use vinegar at all. Using vinegar is a more modern interpretation of pickling. I think of using vinegar a little more like marinating your vegetables. When you're using salt, you are slowly creating the acidity yourself. It is a very, very different process.
866-733-6786 if you want to join our conversation. If you have a question about pickling, about canning, about any kind of food preservation method, this is the time and the number to call. 866-733-6786. Take your questions about anything other than eggplant. You can email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts or questions on our Facebook page. Here's a listener who says, is there any other kind of canning that I can do with plums other than jelly? Anything else that a plum is good for? Karen?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. One of my favorites, the first thing that comes to mind is plum ketchup. I'm a big fan of that. It's in my fridge more often than not. And it's kind of like, imagine the flavor of like a Chinese hoisin sauce. It's rather savory, but also has a bit of tanginess and, of course, the sweetness from the fruit. And when you make it yourself, it is delicious and will take on any French fry.
Kevin, anything else you can do with fruit other than the expected, like with a jam or a sauce? Is there a way that you can turn it into something that's more savory?
Turn it into something that's more savory. I do make some plum jams that I intend to serve with on a savory plate. So a yellow tangy plum jam with mint, for example, to go along with lamb or lamb sausages. But I also what I think about when this listener asks of plums, I love fruit cheeses. Fruit cheese is what the English would call a very thick, dehydrated fruit paste. And there's no dairy involved. There's no cow as part of the process. But it's a sweet preserve that you cook until it's very, very thick. And then you allow it to cure and air dry. And that will last for a long, long time. And it gives you a very wonderful, kind of unusual flavor that pairs very well with cheese, in fact, with a cheese board.
And Jordan in Monterey has a question. Jordan, go ahead.
Hey, it's so fun to hear all of this passion about preserving food. I'm Jordan with Happy Girl Kitchen, and just wanted to mention that, yes, it's true. This farmer's market culture is really what's driving the passion, and that's nationwide. And we also have a jam and pickle club called the Food Preservationists, and this week we're offering 20-pound boxes of Blenheim apricots. So it's a club where you can get bulk amounts of fruit to preserve, and recipes are included. So if you want more about that, you can go to happygirlkitchen.com.
Okay. All right. Jordan, thanks. Let's spend a moment on where people can learn more about how to do this. Are there workshops? Someone mentioned earlier something from Extension. If you want to get smart about this, how do you go about getting smarter, Karen?
If I may plug myself, I'm teaching a class on July 20th at Garden for the Environment, which is a pickling 101 class. I cover quick pickles and also canning vinegar pickles and also a really simple fermentation. So kind of giving people a taste of the three main pickling schools. And I'm also doing a series at through the San Francisco Public Library at a whole bunch of different branches throughout the summer.
And Alex, do you offer workshops as well? Or are there things on your website about sort of the how-to part of this?
There's less of the sort of concrete how-to. I do welcome people into my shop, both because I think it's so valuable to come buy food where your food is made, and I'm also very open to people asking questions about the process. And there's nothing like going to a shop where there's easily 50,000 pounds of vegetables fermenting at a time to get you interested and curious and ask questions. And I certainly have people come and volunteer their time, because really, if I'm going to spend hours talking fermentation to you, it's easier to do it while
Kevin,
we're working.
Kevin, your tips on getting smarter?
I would suggest that people look into the Master Food Preserver program. It's a program that is offered through the University of California Extension. I got my MFP training at UC San Bernardino. We have had here in Los Angeles a Master Food Preserver program. There's one down in OC, I know. So it might be worth listeners just Googling around a little bit. It's a very thorough course. It was a 13-week course at San Bernardino, and you cover the range of preserving techniques. It's quite affordable, and it's very informative. Books as well. I mean, there's been a spate of really, really terrific preserving books out over the past couple of years. Karen's is really wonderful. My book came out this week. So there's a lot of information out there now for those who are curious to learn more.
And to Matthew in Davis. Matthew, go ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm just calling in response to what I heard one of your female guests say. I don't know which one it was, but it's in regard to the botulism. And what I heard was someone say that, well, you know, before you eat the jam, you can throw the jam jar in boiling water and it will kill the botulism, which is true. But if there was C. botulinum growing in there, then that botulism produced the botulinum toxin, and boiling that jam jar will not get rid of the botulinum toxin. And so when you consume the food, you'll actually still be, you know, if indeed it was growing in there, you would still get the poisoning.
Okay. And you're a physician, is that correct?
No. I have a doctorate in food science.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks for keeping us straight on that. And let's just touch on this then for a moment more, because we want to be clear with people about what the potential concerns or dangers are. Kevin West, how do you know whether or not something might be potentially problematic? Is it by odor? Is it by look? When do you know that there is something, as Karen put it, that you ought to just, when in doubt, throw it out?
If a can is active in any way, if a jar is active in any way, in other words, if it's fizzing, if it's if the button on the lid is popped up, if it's foamy, if there's stuff, you know, sort of seeping out of the jar, all of those signs of life are indication that there's some kind of microbial activity in the jar, and the jar should be discarded.
Okay. Matthew, thanks for adding to our conversation this morning. Catherine writes in, I wonder if your guests could speak about kombucha, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the health benefits, and also whether or not it's safe to drink during pregnancy. Alex.
I make a wide variety of kombucha in our shop. It's one of my favorite projects that we do in its complexity. I drank kombucha during my pregnancies, during my nursing, and absolutely loved it.
Okay. Thanks for the question, Catherine. Let's go next to Crystal in Sunnyvale. Crystal, go ahead. Crystal, you're on. Are you
yes.
with us? Go
oh,
ahead.
Hello. Have you ever heard about preserving fruit with alcohol and sugar?
Okay. Preserving fruit with alcohol and sugar. Kevin, sounds like you want to answer.
Oh, yes. I know all about that. I like booze. Alcohol is a very effective preservative, with or without sugar. And there are many, many, many ways that you can preserve fruit with alcohol. But it basically all comes down to this. Take some fruit, put it in a container, pour some booze over the top, and let it sit for a while. And you can hardly go wrong.
Okay, Crystal, thank you. Thanks for the call. Here is some questions I want to read through. Neil writes, I just want to plug the newly passed California Homemade Food Act for any home preservers interested in selling their preserved food. The law allows people to make and sell certain products, those that don't need to be refrigerated, and they can make them at home. I didn't know that. So you can sell now things that you preserve at home. Scott asked, your guests have any questions on sun-dried tomatoes, in particular, putting them into oil? Karen?
You mean how to do it or?
Not sure.
Oh, okay. On really, really warm, sunny days like this, this is certainly great weather to start drying food outside, although usually it can take more than a day. I'm actually a big proponent of oven drying. I always like to teach people who want to do any kind of food preservation at home. I encourage them not to buy a ton of special equipment. And your oven, you already have. It's a wonderful food dehydrator. Additionally, your refrigerator, you already have, which is also a food dehydrator. I have a lot of instruction on this on my website. But basically, the oven door, slightly ajar, very low temperature, food sliced thin on a lightly oiled rack, and it will dry out, and you can keep it. You can keep it on the shelf, although I tend to keep it in the refrigerator as well, just to be extra sure.
Back to our callers, Robin in Atascadero. Robin,
yes, I just had a couple comments. First, preserving is something that's been in my family for a long time. It's something I picked up from my grandfather, including olives. And just recently, starting around the first of the year, I started getting interested in ginger beer, which is something similar to water kefir or kombucha. I don't know if your hosts are familiar with that.
Yeah, I mean, the research I've seen is that the ginger beer plant is a close relative of kombucha, and at some point probably just evolved as it was being fed a different medium.
And Robin, did you have a question about that?
No, I did have one question about a recent problem I had with some apricot jam. I've made it many times before, and I used the no sugar pectin, and I always take a little bit out, put it on the plate, and put it in the fridge to cool it to make sure I have a good gel. I had a good gel. I canned it, and I put it in my pressure cooker to can because I don't have my water bath pot, and I only meant to go to 5 pounds, and it crept up to 15 before I got it down. Now the jam inside the jars has the consistency of syrup. Will that gel up eventually, or do I need to pull them out and recan?
Okay, Robin, thanks. Kevin?
Gosh, that's a good question. Karen, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't. I'm actually not a pressure canner user myself.
No, I'm not. And I haven't worked with very much with commercial pectin supplements, it's hard to know what's going on there.
Yeah, sorry, Robin, but good luck. Sounds like it'll taste good regardless.
Oh, great.
All right. Thank you.
It's
Megan,
still a delicious syrup.
Megan has a question in Hayward. Or, sorry, jump to Cindy. Megan, we'll get to you, I promise. Cindy, go ahead.
Hi. How's it going?
Go ahead, please. We're good.
I just wanted to announce an event that we're having at our store in Alameda. At the Alameda Marketplace on September 27th, we're going to have Truly Fermented Foods. They're a new group in Oakland. We carry their sauerkraut. We carry their sauerkraut, their kimchi, and it sits right next to Cultured Pickle Shop's products.
Okay,
so,
Cindy, thank you.
We're going to come in on the 27th and share some information.
All right, great. Thanks, Cindy. Okay. Let's get to Megan now before we run out of time. Megan, go ahead.
Oh, yes, thank you for taking my call. I've been scouring everywhere I can find looking for a sour pickle recipe when you get those big jars and they have the whole pickle inside of them and they're just really sour. And I just, for the life of me, can't find anywhere where a similar recipe or what the process is to get that. So I'm wondering if I could.
Yep, just, and I am positive we'll have an answer for you. Alex.
I'm going to take the opportunity to plug the same book that Kevin was plugging, and that's Sandor Katz's The Art of Fermentation. And in there, you'll definitely find sour pickle recipes as well as a wide array of other projects.
We have one caller that we have to get to, and it's Khaled in San Jose because he has a question about eggplant. Khaled, go ahead.
Hi, it's rather a comment, not a question.
Okay, go ahead. Great.
So basically, for eggplant pickling, there's you take the smaller eggplants, you core them, and then you stuff them with walnuts, red peppers, and then you pickle them in olive oil. And that particular pickle is called makdous in the Middle East. And for eggplant desserts, you take baby eggplants, and you glacé them with regular sugar syrup and clover, and then you store them in the regular jar, your favorite jar, and they're delicious.
Terrific. I'm so glad we could end on a solution to the eggplant problem. Khaled, thanks so much for joining us and ending our conversation on that note. I also want to thank our guests for being here and their contributions to our program. We want to thank Kevin West for joining us. His new book is called Saving the Season, The Cook's Guide to Home Canning, Pickling, and Preserving. Karen Solomon, author of Jam It, Pickle It, and Cure It. And Alec Hosvin, the owner of the Cultured Pickle Shop in Berkeley. Thanks all very much for participating. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, and Susan Britton. Howard Gelman is our engineer. Dan Zoll, our senior editor. Amanda Stupai, our engagement producer. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.